You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Knox foul from behind, count it, and one. As Tristan pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious. Like.
Hardaway to Trier. Trier drives down. Alonzo Trier. Baker launches a three-hander across the lane to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Mastina, a.k.a. Death. Jam Gundy, you may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 362. Woo-wee! On today's show, the Knicks lose, to the vile and loathsome Chicago Bulls. Boo! In double overtime, mamma mia, 116 to 113. It was a bummer. It was a bummer of a game, you know. One of the ugliest games I've seen in my life, with turnovers and fouls and mistakes aplenty on both sides of the ball. But there were a bunch of kids running around out there for the Knicks, and some of them did some interesting stuff, and we're going to talk about it. We got some things to evaluate. Sort of a bummer of a game, but good for the tank, and some interesting notes on some of our youthful core, right? A couple of updates before we start the show. I am back from Mexico. I am sorry, it was such a bad time for me to be away. But life is unpredictable. And in the end is right. I hope I had the time of my life while I was away. That's a weird thing to do. I'm sorry for doing that. I had a friend's wedding, in case you missed the episode where I talked about that. I had a friend's wedding, poorly timed as far as the Knicks season goes. But what are you going to do? People are important. Take care of your relationships. Basketball is important, too. Try to mix them as best you can. You know, what can I say? Voicemail bag, 929-377-5103. Call us up, talk to us, and if you have some interesting things to say, we will respond to it on one of our voicemail bag sodes. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Mark.
Yes.
A couple of storylines heading into this game. A big one for me is that the Knicks were playing the Bulls. I want you to never forget, ever. Don't ever forget that your duty as a Knicks fan is to hate the Bulls. This is extremely important for you young Knicks fans out there. You might not have been alive. You might barely remember when Michael Jordan would rip our hearts out every single season while he was there. Phil Jackson, what a douche. Only ever just had the best players in the league. Am I right? He's an overrated coach, right? Come on, right? Right? Come on. But the thing is, in life, you should let go of grudges, but in sports fandom, you should hold on to them forever and ever and ever. And even if the current Bulls just don't resemble anything like, you know, they used to, they have no remnants of their past glory. It's like the part in Boogie Nights where all the new kids come in and they can't act. You know what I mean? They don't take it seriously the way Dirk Diggler did, like an art form. You know what I mean? Like, even if that's this current Bulls team, it's still important that we hate them. So never forget to do that. That was one big storyline heading into the game for me. And it lived up to its billing. What an annoying game. We'll talk about it. Another big storyline heading into this game is that Kevin Knox was back. Sprained his ankle after two games and missed a couple weeks. So I didn't expect much from him coming into this game. You know, only his third NBA game. And Rust coming off of injury. But so happy to see him out there. The development can't happen unless he's on the court, right? That's pretty basic. I don't think you guys would argue with that. Great to see you back, Kevin. Looking forward to seeing you get more than 5 minutes, but that's fine. We'll talk about that in a second. The final storyline heading into this game that I found compelling was the new starting lineup. Mostly, it was because of, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s injury, but it's always interesting when we get a new starting lineup this season, or any season, right? But especially this season as we're evaluating different groups. This starting lineup was Frank, Trier, again, because Timmy didn't play. Dotson at the small forward, Vonleh at the power forward, Mitchell Robinson at center. And I just want to take a moment to pause and give thanks. It's important to give thanks, to feel gratitude for the fact that the Knicks this year are not just giving lip service to developing the kids, but they're actually doing it. Could you imagine Hornacek trotting out this lineup? I don't care who's injured, right? Like, Timmy's injured, KP's injured. But if some other coach was here, this starting lineup might have included Lance, it might have included Ennis, it might have included Burke. So I just want to be grateful for the fact that we really are trying to develop these kids, giving them every opportunity to play in big spots, in big situations, and to develop their game. It's great, right? Let's talk about this unit, though. There are some pluses and some minuses. I will say, let's put this kindly, they struggled to find offensive cohesion, right? Would you agree with that? One second. I'm going to sip my coffee. You saw this in a couple of ways. Early on in the game, we saw Frank barking out a play for like 5 to 7 seconds before anyone moved. They were all just standing there, clearly having a little bit of trouble playing together, maybe because of this grouping, maybe because the play itself was confusing. Maybe Frank said the wrong thing, but I don't think my beautiful, sweet baby Frank said the wrong thing to you, right? Right? This group just, they weren't cohesive together. It was giving me some acid flashbacks to how long it took the Knicks to get into some of those triangle sets way back in the day. You guys remember the triangle, right? So that was one thing. Another thing, though, was that Trier was being doubled on the pick and roll, and he just was not making the pass. He wasn't making the reads. It wasn't always on the pick and roll. Sometimes they would just double him, and he really struggled to pass out of it. One time Mitchell Robinson, he rolled a little too far, and so that wasn't great. He wasn't in great position to receive the pass. But Trier also just missed it a couple times. You saw him trying to think through it. He was trying to get better. I counted on the third pick and roll attempt after they shut him down twice with two double teams. He did find Robinson. He passed it to him under the hoop, and he made an accidental touch pass to Vonleh. He let the ball kind of bounce off his gut. Then Vonleh corralled the carom and put it up and got fouled on the funky dunk attempt. But so Trier, you know, he really struggled. He was someone who they looked to get buckets, with Timmy being out specifically, and he didn't quite deliver in this lineup early in the game. Right, and then in the second half, nobody in that lineup could hit a shot when they came out in the third quarter. So not great offensively from these five guys. Strong defensive showing in the first half from them, though. They held the Bulls to 9 points in just over 6.5 minutes in that first quarter, and three of those points were on a bullshit foul on Vonleh. It looked like the ref just blew his whistle by accident. Was not a big fan of the officiating in this one. And then defensively, you know, like I said, they were good in that first quarter. But then in the third quarter, they just fouled the Bulls on every play. It was a barrage of touch fouls to start the third quarter. Some of them legit, some of them not. I don't want to get fined, though, so I'm going to bite my tongue. I just have a general aside about officiating before we continue talking about this game. The way the game is being officiated to start this season, league-wide, I hate it. I will not bite my tongue here. I don't care if I could find Adam Silver. It seems like on a whim, they decide, all right now for these 5 minutes, you can't even whisper in a player's ear if he's on the perimeter or he's crossing through the lane trying to get over a screen. You can't even whisper at this guy. But then someone's in the post and you can jump on his back, you can punch him in the face, you can gouge his eyes out, you can light him on fire. Like, there's no consistency in what kind of contact is allowed. I get you want to open the game up, but the game is open. It's wide open. We got, like, 19 teams averaging 110 points or whatever the stat was that Mike Breen gave us last night. I mean, the scoring is way, 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 way up. We can calm down on some of these. Like, I hate watching these games, man. I don't hate watching these games as basketball, but there's just too many fouls. Too many touch fouls. It's annoying when someone like Draymond Green is pulling out their dirty little tricks and clutching and grabbing, but There's got to be some balance. Balance is the key to everything. And right now, the NBA does not have balance in how they're calling fouls. They got to tighten the shit up. I want to talk about some individual performances of the kids, like Frank and Mitchell Robinson, and more on Alonzo Trier. But before we do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's talk about Frank. Yeah, he looked out of whack offensively, right? His shot was tentative and, dare I say, bad. He shot 0 for 6 from the field, 0 for 3 from 3. He was not getting to the rim in this one, and as a result, was neither scoring for himself nor creating for others. Only had 2 assists on the night. I thought his defense looked typically strong. Alonzo Trier had an epic chase down block, which we'll touch on in a minute. But that was only possible because the Bulls were trying to push the pace, and Frank got in front of, I forget who it was. Was it LaVine? I don't know. You feel me. But Frank got in front of the guy, slowed him down, and then Trier came flying in and got the block, the highlight block. These are the kind of plays that Frank makes all the time, the little plays that don't necessarily show up in the box score. So happy with his defense in this one. But look, overall, he just didn't have it. Not a great game for Frank. Fiz only gave him 16 minutes accordingly. Fine with that. If you don't kill it, you don't catch it, to mangle that phrase, right? So he's in a slump. Frank's in like a little bit of a mini slump. A couple games, he hasn't looked so good. How long does this slump last? I don't know. I think he snaps out of it soon. I don't expect him to show consistency this year. That may be a controversial thing to say. But what I expect of him is to show flashes of amazingness, as he has done already. I expect those flashes to be more frequent than they were last year. And I expect those flashes to be more impressive than they were last year. But I don't expect him to put it together night in and night out just yet. That is the eventual goal. But you have to remember, this is still year 2 of a very young player in the very early stages of his development. He's still only 20 years old. He's still a point guard, one of the most difficult positions to learn. Some say the most difficult position to learn in the NBA. Lots of point guards coming to their own way after they're 20 years old. And he's still a tall-ass point guard. We talked about this last year on the podcast a lot, but tall point guards, historically, have had a little bit longer of an adjustment period getting their games right in the NBA. I think Frank's going to be no different, especially since he was still growing this offseason. Maybe he's still growing now. This is going to take some time, right? So don't freak out. Frank hasn't looked good, sure, but he's also looked pretty good a couple games before this one, right? So he's not either-or player yet. He's both of them. You're not sure what you're going to get on a game-by-game basis. As his career goes on, he's going to become more consistent. Mitchell Robinson, let's talk about him. He struggled a little bit in some of his one-on-one matchups early on. LaVine, who had a good game, is a good player, is playing very well this year. He has something like 5 or 6 30-point games so far, averaging around 27 points. LaVine blew by Mitchell Robinson for a dunk. This was just on a straight-up isolation. He faced up against Robinson, blew by him. That was in the first quarter. Mitchell Robinson also bit on a Wendell Carter pump fake and then got blown by for the basket. That was also in the first quarter. He did, though, provide some saucy help defense, some spicy help defense. He blocked a Justin Holiday 3-point attempt from like kind of the side slash behind. That was in transition, so that was nice. It was one of 2 blocks on the night for Mitchell Robinson in only 11 minutes. He only played 11 minutes, one, partially because Cantor was, having a good Cantor game. More on that in a moment. But also, he just sort of fell apart in that second half barrage of bullshit fouls. I mean, he fouled a little bit, but the refs, I don't know, they pissed me off in this one. But he picked up something like 3 or 4 fouls in about 4 minutes early in the third quarter, and that was basically it. Cantor, like I will get to, was gobbling up every rebound, scoring some points. Again, not Mitchell Robinson's best game, but we saw some of the things that we like to see from him, so not a total wash either. Alonzo Trier, to reiterate what I said earlier, he just had epic struggles passing out of double teams. He was trying to do too much, he wasn't passing, and it looked like one of his bad summer league games. But he also didn't let that get him down. He didn't let his head hang. He was frustrated, you can see that. He had a couple of balls rolling and out. Nothing was falling. He was pissed off. But he wasn't quitting. He wasn't moping. He had a vicious chase down block where he just sunned the shit out of the guy. It was really beautiful. He had a nice push in transition off a steal to close out the first half. He missed that layup, and that's when he kind of was like, ugh, come on already. It was a rough first half for him. But he drew the foul, and he made both foul shots. Speaking of foul shots, he got to the line a bunch in this one, which is a skill the Knicks badly need. He got to the line 9 times and hit all 9 of his free throws. Struggled in the first half, like I said, but he hit a bunch of buckets late and finished with 21 points on 5 of 15 shooting. So that's a little bit of a yikesy kind of thing. But most of that was in that first half when he was super rusty. All the Knicks were super rusty. They were in the 4th percentile effective field goal percentage of all games played this season, this one. The ball was just not going in the basket. But Trier just showed balls of steel. Again, he's been coming up big late in games. He had a 3 to tie the game in regulation. He could have ended the game in regulation with a pull-up mid-range jumper that was like lightly contested, moderately contested, didn't go down. It wasn't bad that he missed it. But he could have made it, didn't make it, but still, you know, it was a tale of two halves, to use the worst cliche in the book for Alonzo Trier. And what you like to see is that he fought through a cold streak, didn't give up, and just really contributed to making this a game in the second half. Shouts to Alonzo Trier. You're doing great. Doing great, kid. Kevin Knox came in for the first time early in the second quarter, got a nice ovation from the Garden crowd. Always like to see that. Missed his first floater attempt, but then he got a steal and got a fast break dunk. Saw the ball go through the hoop. That was nice. A little after that, he was standing unguarded in the corner. Mario Hezonja saw him. He whipped a pass over there. I think he was trying to kind of like, you know, his dad's was an NFL wide receiver, and in the NFL they talk about like you had your eyes upfield. He was looking at the end zone, didn't let the ball come into his hands first and actually make the catch. I think the same thing kind of happened with Knox in this one. He was like, oh, I have a wide open corner 3, I'm going to nail this. And he let the ball just sort of sail right through his fingers. And that was basically it. He wasn't punished though. There's no way, you know, there's no way Fizdale would say like, oh, you missed a pass, you're out for the rest of the game. But it was his first game back. So he just let him get his feet wet a little bit. Only played 5 minutes. I'm fine with that. You know, he's got a long way to go. It's not much else to say about this one. Just great to see him back on the court. And also, I don't know if I've said this officially yet, but I like his shoes. The NBA is doing this thing this year where you can wear whatever shoes you want. And he's got these really loud orange Pumas. Shouts to Clyde, the original Puma. What do you call it? Not mascot. Endorser? I should be, you know, I'm a professional wordsmith of sorts. Really embarrassing that I can't. Spokesperson. He was the original Puma spokesperson for their line of athletic shoes. So nice to see Knox continuing that tradition with some good looking shoes, right? I want to talk about some of the older kids. Dotson, Vonleh, Moody, you know, Cantor. But before we do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. So Damian Dotson was the exception to the rule that nobody on the Knicks could hit a shot. He was 7-for-14 from the field for 18 points. Only 2-of-7 from downtown. But those two were big for the Knicks because they came when no one could hit a shot in the first quarter. He calmly sank a 3 about halfway through the first quarter, and that was the first made shot from the field. They had scored a couple points on some free throws, but that was the first shot of the game about halfway through the first quarter that the Knicks made. And then he made another 3 soon after that. And interestingly enough, in this early season, I don't know if everyone will do this, but the Bulls were respecting his shot. They were respecting his 3-point shot. They were chasing him hard through screens. They were staying up on him on the perimeter. And by his mere presence, he was providing spacing, which is incredibly important. That was nice to see. He had a nice hesitation dribble that got himself into the lane where he laid it up through traffic with the rugged finish. He had a nice floater over Lopez in overtime to take the lead with 2 minutes left. Showed some nice touch and awareness there. He did a nice job coming off elbow screens for a couple of wide-open mid-rangers. Again, you know we don't like mid-range shots here, but it doesn't mean the Knicks should never take them. Coming off of a screen, getting the team moving off the ball, I'm in favor of that. When the Knicks are struggling to score, you can spring yourself for an open shot the defense is probably going to give you because defenses are geared to stop the three and shots at the rim, and he executed those plays well. Just another nice game from Dotson. He's playing great on both sides of the ball. He's a really pleasant early surprise, and I'm glad he's getting all these minutes while someone like Ron is sitting, as much as I've been a Ron stan. And again, you know, I'm not under any illusions here. I always thought Ron was kind of like a 10-minute-a-game kind of night. But right now, he doesn't deserve those minutes. Dotson is deserving of his spot in the starting lineup, and I think that we're going to continue to see good things out of him. He's a little bit older, but I think he's still got lots of room to develop, and I think he's going to continue to grow. Noah Vonleh. Let's talk about his defense. He broke up an oop attempt for Levine early in the first quarter. He did a nice job staying upright as Levine attacked the rim a little bit after that, and he made Levine miss the layup attempt. Then he sunned Wendell Carter almost to death. Wendell Carter tried to dunk it on him in the post, obviously, and Vonleh said no. On offense, it was a little weird. It seemed like he was their featured offensive player in the first quarter. I will say this about him. He had a nice little spin move, a nice little floater. He knocked down a wide-open three that they refused to guard because, unlike Dotson, he hasn't earned that yet. I don't think he necessarily will, but nice to see that he's got that in his repertoire, can break it out in case of an emergency. I think he could, if we're talking about ways to develop, I'm not going to get on him for this. This isn't something that's like, how dare he not be great at this yet? But he could make some more advanced reads out of the pick and roll. Sometimes he gets the ball on the roll, and it's well guarded. You know, you can roll and get the ball and have deep post position, but it'd still not be a good idea for you to shoot. And in those situations, when the guy's all over you, even though you got a nice pass, nice pocket pass from, say, Trey Burke, you know, what you should do is look to see if you can hit shooters. There was one time early in the first where this happened. He got the ball in the pick and roll, and everyone was kind of pointing to, I forget who was standing in the corner, and they were like, yeah, yelling and shouting, and he didn't really see it, didn't really hear it, didn't make the pass. Again, not going to kill him for it, but that's something to see. Will he get better at that as the season goes on? It's something I will be keeping track of. But again, solid showing from Vonleh as far as the center position goes, or, you know, just the front court. This was Cantor's night, but another double-double from Vonleh, which doesn't always mean anything. You know, I've said this about Kanter, so I'll say that, be fair. But 10 points, 11 rebounds, some feisty defense, another nice game from Noah Vonleh, who, you know, wasn't even a sure thing to make the roster heading into the season. So Dotson's been a good surprise, Vonleh's been a good surprise, Trier's been a good surprise, lots of good surprises early in the season. Now, let's talk about guys that I'm not that into, but I feel obligated to cover as, you know, the Knicks podcast of record. Let's be honest here, right? Is that saying too much? Shouts to all you other Knicks podcasts. We're a family. It's a competition, but it's a friendly competition. Like the Knicks point guard competition. You know what I mean? We all love each other. We want to see each other succeed. Maybe they don't want to see me succeed, but I want to see them succeed. Because I love my fellow man. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? All right, let's talk about Moutier. This was a good Moutier game. Let's talk about it. He had a nice drive and dish to Hezonja in the second quarter. He used Cantor to sort of run his man off of him. Cantor wasn't really setting a pick, but he did one of those things where he's kind of running up the court and Moutier stayed near him and was kind of like dribbling in, dribbling out, and then he sprung himself for a nice little jumper running his man off Cantor. He hit a corner three, which is important to note because it's his first three-pointer of the season. And the big thing for Moutier was he had a very strong third quarter, and he played a big role in bringing the Knicks back from a 9-point deficit with some timely dishing and swishing. I gotta give it up to him. He did some things that the Knicks needed. But then he was kind of feeling himself. He forced it two possessions in a row and, you know, missed a weird layup, missed a heavily contested shot. He had a weird transition defense blunder where he didn't turn around. Like, his back was to the guy who was dribbling the ball, also known as the ball handler. And he didn't turn around and got called for a foul, as it was actually Blakeney who kind of killed the Knicks all night. He was like the G League scoring champion last year, and you know, he had a good game against the Knicks, whatever that means. But Moutier didn't turn around, so he just kind of ran into Moutier, and he got the and-one layup. On the flip side, you know, Moutier, he hit a great Euro step layup. It was a beautiful Euro step to tie the game in double overtime. But then he fouled Levine with 0.2 seconds left, and this was a few possessions after throwing away an out-of-bounds pass. So, you know, this was a good Moutier game, but he still had a decent number of blunders, still missed a decent number of layups, fell to the ground a couple times. Still not a fan, but he did it enough that it was helpful overall on a night when the Knicks needed it. Let's keep moving. Speaking of backhanded compliments, let's talk about Enes Kanter. He had a couple of nice dishes to Hezonja in this one, who was making some nice off-ball cuts. They had the backdoor play going. And, you know, Kanter, I will say, was actively trying to pass for much of this game. Maybe not all of it, but for much of it. And that's one of my biggest criticisms of him. If you're looking for Enes Kanter to develop his game, I think he's kind of settled into what he is. But if you're someone who thinks that he's got room to grow, this is one of the things that you're hoping to see from him. This was a good game in that regard. He was looking to pass. I'll give him that. And, you know, he grabbed a buttload of rebounds, is the technical term. 24 rebounds. You know, I'll leave it at that. A lot of them don't seem to be the hardest fight. The ball just finds him. I don't know. There have been a couple stats floating around out there. The Knicks' rebounding rates are basically the same whether or not Kanter is on the court. So he puts up these gaudy numbers, but I don't know. They seem to come in loss. I'm just going to keep going. Kanter had a good game. He had a good game. He gave them points that they needed. You know, no one else was scoring. Here's just what I want to say, because this is going to be one of those games where people are like, you're crazy. Kanter's good. Look what he can do. 24 rebounds. That's a lot. No, you know, no one had had 20 points, 20 rebounds, and I think he had 5 assists since Charles Barkley did it. You know, 1,000 years ago when he was still roaming the earth. But I want you to keep this in mind. What kind of game was this? Right? What kind of game was this? Yeah, honest. Tell me, what kind of game was this? Was it a well-played game? Was it a game against a good opponent? Right? They need Kanter sometimes. They do. But it usually comes, almost always comes, during these sorts of games. Here's what I want you to do if you're someone who's a big fan of Kanter. I want you to watch for the next time that you think the Knicks need Kanter out there against a good team. I want you to tell me when it happens against a good team, against a playoff-bound team. It's these games against bad teams where they need him that make people think he's good. But unfortunately, in the NBA, that doesn't cut it. Kanter is very good at basketball for some random asshole. Just being in the NBA, you're in the upper echelon of basketball players in the entire world. He's incredible at basketball, actually. But for the NBA, for this upper echelon, he's not so good. He leaves a lot to be desired. But, you know, again, this is one of his better games. So if you're one of those people who doesn't like when I go negative, I'll just say, nice job, Enes. Really liked what you did out there. He was also involved in the play that made me laugh the most in the entire game. It was the fourth quarter. He backed down, what was the guy's name? Cristiano Felicio. he backed him down until he was like right under the hoop, but Felicio was draped all over him. And for some reason, Hezonja was like up Kanter's butt, standing right next to him under the basket. And Kanter sort of awkwardly shoved the ball at Hezonja, who sort of bobbled it for a little bit, threw up this weird little floater, made it, got the foul. And Kanter was just screaming with joy and was yelling at Hezonja until Hezonja basically started laughing. I started cracking up because it was this weird sloppy play. And I think Kanter knew it. But it was a basket that they needed at a crucial time. So he was celebrating. They both got a little bit of a laugh out of it. I enjoyed it. One final thing on Kanter, there was a soundbite that they were playing during this game where Fizdale said that Kanter could be a sixth man of the year candidate with the numbers that he's putting up. And I think that's a savvy move by Fiz, a good way to spin it, to Cantor because, you know, Cantor's in a contract year. He's also only 26. He sees himself as a starter. He wants to get another big paycheck. Wouldn't you? Of course. You know, if he's saying, look, we're going to get you an award, I don't think Cantor's going to love it, but that's one of those things that can help smooth it out. You know, not much more to say about that, but a nice, savvy little piece of communication from David Fizdale to one of his players. Let's close out these individual thoughts. Hezonja, not exactly killing it out there, but like I said, he had some good off-ball movement. He kept getting hit by Cantor on his backdoor cuts. They were developing a, dare I say, quasi-Kyle O'Quinn, Doug McDermott-esque chemistry. We're not there yet, but keep working on it, guys. Maybe you can get something going there, you know? Unfortunately, again, his decision-making is just whack, man. Like, I just don't have faith that he's ever going to get that together. He pulled the trigger on at least three three-pointers that came from about 400 feet out, and he has no reason to do that. He's not that guy. Like, that shot can be a good shot for a Steph Curry or someone like this who can provide mega spacing. Hezonja has done nothing to show that he's that guy. And he did it at a really bad time. The game was tied at 93 late in the fourth. The Knicks had finally pulled even after being down by about 10 points. And then he hoisted up this really long three that they didn't need early in the shot clock. It was annoying. So this game, it was a doo-doo sandwich supreme. Both teams played like poop offensively. Neither team was making a lot of shots. You know, in overtime, there were multiple air ball threes, one from Hezonja, one from LaVine. The Bulls stepped out of bounds like four times. Moutier, like I said, threw away an inbounds pass with 4 seconds left in that first overtime. The set didn't look that good to begin with, but then he made a poor decision. Trier and Vonleh were in some weird two-man game at the top of the arc, and Trier was demanding the ball even though he wasn't open, and then Vonleh threw it to him and it was a turnover that everyone saw coming. There were a million instant replays which just sucked the life out of game. I will never not be sure to not use two negatives. I will always be sure that replay sucks. They should get rid of it. This is one of my most unpopular takes, but I feel so strongly about this. They miss calls all game long. All game long. They make wrong calls all game long. It's just a part of it. You live with it. This illusion of correctness is ridiculous. Look how much instant replay there is right now. Do you think to yourself, man, they really got that right during any game that you ever watch? Is officiating fixed now because of all the instant replay we have? No, it's not. Hardly anyone agrees with me, but I don't care. I've never felt stronger about anything in my entire life. I hate replay. It sucks. We have the playoffs to make sure that these calls don't matter. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're good, you're going to win. The referees can't keep you down for 4 games in the playoffs. You don't need the great robot judge in the sky slowing every game down to an unbearable crawl. I don't want to sit in basketball court. I want to watch a basketball game. It makes me feel like I'm at the DMV. Jesus Christ, enough of the replay. It sucks. Ugh. To close on a happy note, a couple of highlights from Breen and Clyde. The first time they mentioned Cristiano Felicio, Clyde said, "Sounds like you should be a singer, Mike," which just made me laugh. And then Mike, at one point, getting kind of exasperated, you don't hear him get like snarky too often, he said, "The Knicks have been in the penalty for like an hour," because they got so many fouls early in the third quarter. And it was just cracking me up. I basically, you guys know the theme song because you listen to the show. I really want Mimar, who did the theme song for us, to make me like a bitter version of the theme song where all the sound bites are of the Knicks like losing by 100. You know, the garden crowd getting restless and shit like that. So Mimar, if you're listening, hook it up. It'll be our alternate theme song. All right, that's it for today's show. I want to thank you guys so much for listening. If you've got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Subscriptions help us grow and get ad revenue and make the show better and all that stuff. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Word of mouth is very important to us. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie. Or you can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report for lots of jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Easier said than done, but try it. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Doo-doo stinks. Always salt in the pasta water. Take that, take that, take that. Data, Biggie's better than Pac. Peace.